You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek: The Next Generation. And tonight's episode is 11001001. Or if you're in the UK, it's 11001001. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
And I'm James from London.
How are you, James?
I'm good.
I just put down your entire country, I guess.
Yeah, I'm tickled by your by your hatred of the English.
I know, I don't understand what's wrong with me. But you know what's funny is I probably shouldn't do that considering most of our downloads actually come from the UK. Now, it could be because we're on Trekmate, which is a UK website. I don't know. But anyway, you guys, I love you all. So anyway, it's tonight's synopsis is: while a group of technology-advanced aliens board the Enterprise to update the ship's computer systems, Riker discovers just how real a holodeck character can be. Yeah. This is the 15th episode of Season 1 of Star Trek: The Next Generation. It was first aired on January 1st, 1988, written by Maurice Hurley and Robert Lewin, and directed again by Paul Finch. hopefully he's not in the putty right now as he listens to that. Last time it caused a mess. Now it's directed by Paul Lynch. Tonight's guest stars include Carolyn McCormick as Minuet, Gene Dynarski as Orfil Quinteros, Kelly Ann McNally as 1-1, Iva Lane as 0-0, Alexandra Johnson as 1-0, Katie Boyer as 0-1, hence the name, Jack Sheldon as piano player, who doesn't like Riker's trombone playing, Abdul Salam El Razak as the bass player, who digs that woman over there? Ron Brown is the drummer. So, what do we think about this one? I like the Bynars. I think they really had to do their homework to even name this correctly. They had to do their homework to do the Bynars. And I tried something with this episode that I thought no other podcaster doing anything about this episode ever tried. And I'll tell you a little more about that, too. And I also noticed something about the computer on the Enterprise that I have never, ever, ever noticed before, too. And I doubt anybody else has either. So we'll talk about that as well. What about you, James?
I actually like this episode. I think this is quite nice. And I also I like the Bynars. I think the Bynars are good aliens in the sense that I think they're almost a concept alien, right? It's, you know, what would happen if people became so connected to computers? How would that affect their interactions and their society? So I quite like that. I mean, it's not the greatest episode in the world, but I think it's a pretty good stab, certainly for the first season.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I thought 11001001, that's obviously binary, and did you know what that actually stood before we, what it means before we actually looked it up? Can you tell us what you know about it?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
I haven't looked it up. I always thought that it was just the names of the Bynars.
Which so, it was, but 11 and 00, and then there's 10 and 01. So that's how they named it, was by the four Bynars that showed up. But the number is actually the number 201 in binary. So then I thought, well, since Star Trek loves the number 47, what would have been the binary version of 47? And that would have come up to 101111. So you would have had, which obviously we're missing one number. So I guess, you know, maybe they could have named it 101111100. I don't know what that would have turned out in binary. So forget the 47.
Before we get into the episode review, we'll take a look at our forum feedback.
That's an idea. All right.
Now, Lou, I believe you have an email for us.
I do, and this is what it says. This is coming from Colin. I don't know if he has your email address, but I should have probably forwarded it to you, but you could be surprised. He says, "Hi, both. I'm loving the reviews you guys are doing. You make interesting observations, which are backed up by the fact that you often see things from different points of view. This is all the better as you both spot different things and raise different points. I also like the way you're not negative for the sake of it. I dislike podcasts that rip an episode of Trek to pieces in the name of entertainment, then sign off saying we really love Star Trek. I sometimes could be guilty of that. You'd really never guess." Yeah. "Whereas you two point valid points and make reasonable arguments, this is enforced by you saying on more than one occasion, 'Let's remember this was made in the 80s. It's a pet annoyance of mine when people review TOS and are negative about it. The fault lies in the fact the review it with 21st century eyes. We're reviewing it with 21st century eyes. They don't concede that it was made in the 60s, whereas Mark Stamper does keep that in mind on his podcast, and it's reflected well in his reviews. You two also reflect that as well, so praise and credit where credit is due." He says, as to Haven, well, the disco ball spaceship aside, it does raise an awful lot of questions. Firstly, the disco ship is pre-warp, in which case, does it have a hydroponics bay? If it's been in space for so long, how are they managing for food and fuel? Never mind raw materials for clothing and all the artwork." I say artwork loosely, which brings us to star-crossed lovers. You've been drawing a girl your entire life, yet you want to marry someone else. What happened to Riker and Troy's Imzadi connection? I think that's why he was a little sad puppy. Also, Troy was happy to marry this guy who's clearly infatuated with someone else. The glaring potholes about telepathy aside, which is conveniently glossed over in the script, let's spare a thought for the crew of the Enterprise. They're there in orbit with the anticipation of shore leave to the fabled planet of Haven. Did any go? No. Not one disco ship turns up, shore leave goes out the window, and they're queuing up to beam down, bags packed, and the Enterprise leaves orbit and warps out. Oops. Anyway, great show, guys. Keep it up.
Okay, well, that's nice feedback. That's always good. Always good to hear from people.
Thank you very much, Colin. I appreciate you doing that. I think we're having a lot of fun. The doc sure is enjoying this, and I don't want to be negative to be negative. You know, I've always said I kind of do look at it as entertainment, because if you think about it, every Star Trek podcast that ever does anything about Star Trek, we do point out the glaring mistakes or what we think is silly on an episode. But just for the sake of being jerks about it, no, I agree. I wouldn't do that. I try to find the positive, even on our last episode, Angel One. I tried to find some positive on there.
Remind me, what was the positive on from Angel One?
Hey, we just did that last week. I don't remember now. Okay, that was 10 minutes ago, really. But I don't know if there was a positive.
There was the positive about the moral the thing that Beata said before executing. We found that fun.
I like the fact that let's see here. The sideburns on everybody. Yeah. Yep. I found that very fascinating that everybody had sideburns on the last episode. And they're all shaped the same. So there you go. Anyway, let's go back to other forums so I can dig myself out of that hole.
Okay, shall I start? We've got a forum post from Kieran McDuff, and it's about Betazoid weddings. He says, I think I'll stick to wearing a kilt. Some things are best left unseen.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps. As for the rest of the episode, well, the unexplained psychic link was bizarre. Pretty sure I've dreamed of women as well, but none of them ever walked into my life. Also, the leader of Haven freaking out the closer the ship got to the planet was more annoying than tension building.
Yeah.
And actually, I agree with that. I can't remember if I mentioned that, but that is a very valid point. But worst of all was the whiny teenage stroppy Riker. Actually, I'm not sure teenage goes back far enough. He was acting like a small child that had decided he didn't want to play with the toy anymore, right up until someone else wanted to play with it, and then he wanted it more than anything else in the universe. Honestly, Riker in this episode was quite possibly more annoying than anything Wesley ever managed.
Well, I think and somebody took away Riker's sippy cup.
Yes. I think we did mention a lot of this stuff, right? This seems to ring bells with the points that I was trying to raise.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, he was, I don't know, he was just a little too whiny. He, you know, like Beyonce says, if you like it, you should have put a ring on it. You know, just because somebody else sent a whole quark-faced thing of jewels to her, you know, too bad. So sad. Bye-bye. Anyway, okay, Queen Cat Blue says, yes, I'm a Troy Riker relationship fan. That's probably why I don't mind whiny, jealous Riker on the whole in this episode. Nor do I mind the hints about Troy and Riker possibly rekindling their relationship throughout the seasons. Menage a Troy, the flashbacks and violations, and other episodes. To me, that is just the journey that they take that makes their actions in Insurrection and their wedding and Nemesis believable. It doesn't come out of the blue with no foundation. Yeah, certainly not like her relationship with Worf. Where in the world did that come from?
Are there any fans of that relationship? Am I remembering wrong? But did it actually just come from a single episode?
Just out of nowhere. It just happened to be there.
And worst of all, it's not worst of all. I mean, I know it kind of first appears in the alternative universe in Parallels, and I think it then gets acted on in the real universe, I suppose, in All Good Things. But yeah, I didn't see where that was going.
Yeah, I think they should have named that Some Good Things. But anyway, go on.
I'm gonna try to get on the good side of Cena though, because I think I'm gonna beg to get her to let me do my Desert Island trek. I think I'm gonna have to butter her up. So great point, Cena.
Well, yeah, I did a Desert Island trek with Baker, I believe. I'm still waiting for the shipwreck trek. Come on, Cena. I'm not gonna beg.
So we move on to Commander Furbob, and he said, this was an episode I originally liked on the first watch. I loved Roxana Troy, and the dress plant thing that she was wearing was funny. I was neither impressed nor depressed by the overall story, as it was a typical Star Trek story. I am also a big first season apologist, as when I watched Star Trek Next Generation for the first time through, I was still a big fan of the original series, and these stories are still in that ilk, so I am happy to give the benefit of the doubt. I like James's analogy of Star Trek to sex. It is exactly right. Now, I don't remember that at all.
I don't remember that either.
I don't think it was in this. I think that he's picked that up from I appeared on previously in the Alpha Quadrant to review one of their episodes, and I think that's where that comes from.
Okay.
But it's far too filthy to be brought up on our show. Huh. This podcast is exactly what it should be. Congratulations to Lou and James for an excellent show. I'll be checking my availability now to see if I can be a guest.
And he has done that. And let me go back to our sheet here. Commander Furbob will be on in 4 episodes for Coming of Age. And that will be recorded on June 20th. So, all right, Commander, we're waiting for that. Oh, Oh, and I do ask, I did tell Commander Furball that he's welcome to come on, and that, you know, we even have one like Skin of Evil that I was looking for some takers for, and sure enough, Captain Proton said, I would love to guest on that one. So, Captain Proton, you are set. We'll have Ben on Skin of Evil, which we'll record on July 18th. And then I say your plug. So let's go on to Captain Proton. Okay, I don't see Riker's reaction to the situation as unrealistic or out of character. I just see it as the way not to act around a woman. Much of this episode is a drag, especially the dinner scene. Data annoys me. But I enjoy seeing the sets. The first season is just great for the fact that most of these sets will never be used again, giving a unique look to the inside of the 1701D. I kind of agree with the sets, but I can't agree with the rest. I thought the dinner scene was actually kind of funny. They're just jabbing on each other back and forth, and the plant, and, you know, could you please continue on with the petty bickering? I don't see it as really annoying. Walking around like a buzzard, yeah, that would be annoying if I had him behind me while I was eating. But I thought the way they set it up was pretty funny.
No, actually, I tend to agree with you, but then again, I'm an apologist for this stuff. It just tickles me. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, well, let's not forget it was the 80s. There, see, we did it for this episode, too. Okay. So, let's go ahead and thank you guys for the forum. And remember, we're still looking, when you do a forum post, give your rating for the episode that we're doing. So, today will be 1100 or 00, 100 or 001. just kicking him when he's down. Okay. So we're in space dock above Tarsis 3. Does Tarsis ring a bell later on in the series?
Oh, I don't... Not to me, it doesn't.
For some reason, maybe Tarsis just... I don't know, maybe it's Tartis. Or, you know, the TARDIS. I don't know. But Tarsis sounds familiar to me. So anyway, we're there for a refit and upgrade of the holodeck, which has been giving us problems. Yeah, no kidding.
And we do get the, we do get the you know, the giant space dock from A Search for Spock here, mm-hmm. reused. And actually, I have to say, I think it's a wonderful, it's a wonderful model. It's a wonderfully designed starbase here, right?
Yeah, it looks like a drill.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think, I'm watching the episodes on Blu-ray, and it really is very, very crisp and very, very nice, and it's all, you know, all lit up very gorgeously. So I think that actually I quite like the fact that, you know, they are able to use things from the from the film series as we are going through the Next Generation. I think obviously the Klingon ships come up, the starbase here. Obviously the Excelsior comes along as well. I mean, almost any other starship we meet up with is an Excelsior class.
Yeah.
And I think it's quite nice that you get that kind of continuity in the tech.
Okay. Well, it's time to welcome the Bynars. And at the start, we see two of them, which are 10 and 01. They work in pairs and communicate with each other at high, high speeds.
Okay, I have a problem here already.
Uh-oh. Go on.
Because if there are two of them, why does one of them have to be called 01 and one of them has to be called 10? Couldn't they just be called, one of them be called 0 and one of them be called 1?
Oh.
You don't need two digits to distinguish between two people. You need two digits to distinguish between four, but you only need one digit to distinguish between two.
Right. However, if you get a third and a fourth one, which we do see, what are they going to be called?
Well, at that point, by the time you need four, you need two digits. But then, uh-huh. The question becomes, is that what happens if there's a fifth?
Right.
Because by the time you have a fifth, you need three digits to distinguish them.
Uh-huh.
And
no.
I assume that...
I don't think one would work, because it doesn't... Didn't it have to be the mirror of the last one? 10 and 01? 11 and 00? Or 01 and 10? I don't know. I mean, I would think it... Because 11... To have one of them named 11 and the other be 10, that blows that out of the water then.
Oh. No, you can still be called 11 and be married to someone called 10.
Oh, but they're not married. They're not men. They're not women. they're Data's. I'm surprised Data didn't have more in common with them.
And actually, I think that something we've been seeing throughout the original, throughout the first season, is that the kind of thing that Data gets into in the later seasons, he kind of holds back from, right? So he holds back from engineering. He holds back from a lot of these techie alien races. Because I agree, if this had been later on in the seasons, I think Data would have been, had these guys as a kindred spirit, and he would be fascinated by these guys, and he would be trying to learn. Whereas now he's not involved. He doesn't really, he doesn't really talk to them. He doesn't really interact with them. And it's only a couple of, it's not actually a couple of years. It's 5 years before you see the exocomps, right? And when you see those guys, he does form a relationship.
Right.
And he also forms a relationship with the nanites later. But with these guys, he just doesn't seem to notice them.
Take him or leave him. I mean, because I wonder, when they were in their high pitched talking, if Data could have translated what they were saying. They may have, he may have been able to. Maybe that's why, because they figured some fan somewhere like me was going to say that if Data was to listen to them and slow down their talking, he could have realized what they were saying. Yeah, these people are idiots. I can't wait till we steal their ship and use their computer.
Do you think they would have been so explicit?
Well, they had to have. I don't know. But, okay. So they're going to upgrade the computer, and they only have 48 hours to do it, because in 48 plus 6, we have to be somewhere very, 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 very important, and we cannot be delayed by even 1 hour. Why does he say 48 plus 6 instead of just 54?
I don't know.
Okay, so Riker,
it makes it sound alien.
I suppose 48 plus 6, because then in their heads they're going, wait, stop. Let me add that up real quick. 48. Oh, okay, 54 hours. Okay, Riker seems to be just ducky with the binars, don't you think?
Yeah, he seems to be extremely suspicious. I mean, in my notes, I've got I don't know if you listen to the Wilderness, and as they're doing their review of Deep Space Nine, but they came up with the suggestion that that Riker was a little bit racist because of the way he treats other aliens, and I think it's all in jest. It's not really serious, but you do have occasions where Riker is a little bit suspicious of other species, and in this case, he is suspicious of the binars, and he says, "Oh, I don't quite trust them," and he's the guy that doesn't quite, he's not quite comfortable around these little people with high pitched voices that he doesn't understand, and. At the back of my mind, I was thinking, oh, Riker, you should really be a bit more tolerant here.
Actually, I thought in the beginning when he said that they seemed perfect for this job, I was kind of thought that maybe he was all for him, but then he seemed to just switch himself. Because when I wrote this down, what I do is I do my notes as I'm watching it. And it's, I just thought, well, he seemed to be ducky with them, but, he didn't like Kinsiski working on the engines, but for some reason he seems okay from the binars at the start. And like you say, I think maybe what it was is because he wants to get the clothes off of one of them to see what they really look like. He was trying to butter up to him at the start, and it didn't work. But anyway, yeah, and then he seems to change. So I don't know. But, I'm looking at a picture on Memory Alpha, and something else I never noticed on the Binar's uniforms. One of them, I mean, they're dressed different. I don't know.
They're mirrored.
Yeah,
they're mirrored.
They're mirrored. But, yeah. I mean, that's interesting. Like, one's got a little strap coming from the shoulder to the chest, right chest going left, and the other got the left shoulder to the chest going right. That's interesting. I never realized they had different uniforms like that. And even the design all the way down to the legs are different. Fascinating. They're mirrored in each other. Okay.
I do, by the way, I do quite enjoy the concept of the binars as a race. I think it's something that you'd like to see, science fiction in general kind of handle, right? It's a legitimate question about, how far can you push an interaction and a connection with technology, and what would that do to people, and these people, that they're fundamentally the next stage beyond having a tablet with a good internet connection, and And yeah, I quite like how, you know, how they show their society has changed based on their reliance on technology.
Okay. So Captain Picard is heading for his cabin to put his feet up and turn on his personal relaxation light. And I immediately thought, what? You're what? What? And Riker just kind of smirks, like, you know, he knows what the relaxation light is. What do you think the relaxation light is?
I'm trying to think of a way of bringing in, you know, I don't know what it is, but I'm pretty sure there are going to be four of them.
Good one. Yes. You didn't say relaxation lights. Basically, I figure in the 24th century, the relaxation light must be a great thing, so I want one now. I don't want to wait. So somebody, tell me where I can find a personal relaxation light. I can't stand lights when I'm trying to sleep, so if that's what he's getting at. Unless it's, you know, like a little light, because he says he's going to drop himself into a nice book. So maybe the relaxation light is just a little tiny light to help him read.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
It's possible. Okay. Will, on the other hand, doesn't know what he's going to do, so he does some walking around, giving the binars a stink eye.
And he does wander around. He bumps into a fair number of people, right?
Yeah.
I didn't, you know, recall in the episode, I know he ends up in the holodeck and, you know, gets into all of the stuff we're going to talk about in a second. But he does seem to wander around and start, you know, interfering in other people's lives, frankly. So he ends up speaking to, you know, Worf and Yar, who are off to play, you know, Parisi Squares, and he pops into Data and Geordi. And actually, I like the Data and Geordi scene. I think that's nice.
Yeah. A blind man teaching an android how to paint?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So, got to be worth a couple of pages in somebody's book.
Yeah. All right, so after Will leaves Wesley in command of the bridge...
Why would he do such a thing?
That's a questionable judgment. What if someone starts attacking them at the time, or the binars go crazy and decide to take over the ship? Oh, wait, they did. Uh-huh. Okay.
So stay tuned to find out how that goes.
Yeah, let's see what happens there. Two of the binars give Wesley an evil glance. You know, just think. He tried to warn everybody about lore, and they completely dismissed him. You know, maybe my career's over, but had I you listen to me in the start. So I guess now that the binars gave him an evil glance, should he report this or not? You didn't want to get any more trouble.
No, I think not. I think now that he's been officially stamped down, he's not putting himself forward for, you know, he's keeping his head down.
Right, but in this case, had he actually said, you know, they're giving me an ugly look, something's going on, they would have been more prepared. So, mm-hmm. Worf, Yar, and two unnamed nobodies are heading to the starbase for some Parisi Squares. I don't remember, did we ever see what Parisi Squares were?
I don't think so. The only thing that I might be missing, there might be a showing of it on the holodeck in Voyager. That's the only thing I can think of. But I don't think it is. I think that people always mention they're going for Parisi Squares. They also always mention that it's lethal.
Yes.
And why would anyone play it? Because, you know, isn't it the case that the Doctor's daughter in real life ends up, is that a Parisi Squares accident?
The doctor's yes she did, yes, she was playing Parisi Squares.
So I don't see, why would you do this? Why would you be playing something you can, that's so dangerous? But I don't know. I mean, what do you reckon that the game is?
Okay, I have no idea. Maybe it's some kind of wrestling match or something where you beat the hell out of each other.
I've always thought it was something like baseball.
Well, no.
But like, you know, you have sticks and you go after them or something. I don't know.
Anybody holding the ball gets whacked with the stick. I don't know, but like the Doctor, he had a reason to be upset for Belle playing Parisi Squares, because in that one, to her point of view, it is her reality. Whereas when Riker got upset with little Jean-Luc for playing Parisi Squares, I think maybe he played it in the gymnasium and not the holodeck. Because in the holodeck, you have the safeties on, you can't get hurt. In the gymnasium, there are no safeties, so you could get hurt. The only thing I do know is that when you're wearing a Parisi square suit, it shows a lot of definition. That's one thing I do remember.
It does indeed.
It does indeed. Okay. Now, here's something I mentioned earlier that I've never noticed until now. Okay. I even got this in red. It was that important to me. When there's a power reduction in section L94, the computer responds that it was necessary to facilitate the system upgrade. Full power can be restored. Now, if you listen carefully, I said, it is necessary to facilitate the system upgrade. Full power can be restored. In other words, the computer took a breath. Why would the computer need to take a breath? Between sentences, the computer should not take a breath. I think, were the editors that flimsy or lazy that they couldn't see it or hear it? But when you hear Majel Barrett talking on the as a computer, she actually takes a breath between the two sentences, three sentences that she uses.
Wow, I did not notice that. I'm going to go back. I'm going to go back and try to catch that, because I didn't notice it.
Oh yeah, even in part of editing, Mike Smith of the Mike Tech Show actually is so anal about taking a breath out that he'll highlight that. And he'll take it out, where I don't do that. But when you are talking, I've noticed on my microphone, you can hear my breath sometimes when we put it together and put the two sounds. So as one thing I love about Colgraph Toolbar is it puts your track on one side and my track on another side. So if one of our sides has a little extra C noise or something, I can get rid of out of that one track. So while you're talking, I'm changing my breath sound to silence. So that's pretty cool, and I can't believe they can't do that.
You mean when making the show? I'm sure they can. It's just that they couldn't be bothered.
Did anybody think that anyone would be as anal as me? I suppose not.
And obviously, all of this stuff has been remastered fairly recently as well.
Right.
So it would have been easier to take him out.
Okay, you got the Blu-ray of this. Listen to it and see if it's taken out.
And okay, so it's during the bit where the starts powering down.
Yes.
I will try to find that.
Okay. Okay, so let's see. We talked about the blind man teaching the android how to paint. Crusher is on her way to Starbase because Dr. Terrence Epstein is here, the leading mind in cybernetics, and she wants to run a new procedure combining cybernetics and regeneration techniques past the dock. Fascinating.
By the way, yeah, to me this sounds too much like the Borg.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He said, call me crazy, but I think that this guy might be, you know, his experiments might have got out of control a couple of years back, and very bad things are now happening in the Delta Quadrant.
Right. And a part taken out of the script is that this doctor that she's so crazy about actually turned out to only be 26.
Oh, is that right? I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, there's a little bit in there that was taken out. Okay. So, now, Will finally ends up where he should have started, the holodeck. Two of the Binars inform him that the boo-boo that the holodeck suffered by the Harada probe has been corrected and is ready to fill him with delights, so to speak. Now, what do you think of Minuet?
I think it's... I have no problem with there being realistic holographic characters that you can interact with, so I'm happy with that. I like the idea of people. So far in terms of the holodeck, we've seen either mute people, like when Tasha Yar was fighting them, or we've had kind of caricatures, I suppose, in a way, in terms of the big goodbye people playing roles. Whereas this is kind of more of a character you can interact with. I don't have a problem with that at all. I think it's good. The only problem that I do have with holodeck characters is when the holodeck characters know that they're holodeck characters and they refer to themselves as such. And I maybe the problem is with me, but I always just find that so creepy.
Yes.
You're dealing with a person that knows they're actually not really a person, but is really they're really a ghost or something. And I find it weird.
Mm-hmm. Right. She even says it in this one, I'm not programmed to give you that information. And then she spills the beans a little bit ago, but, you know, first she wasn't programmed, but then she gives up the whole thing, what's going on. And then we have Professor Moriarty, and that was all because of the slip of the tongue, you know, opponent capable of defeating Data. And then we have the Fairhaven characters. Ah, Tommy, my boy. Okay. Now, here's that thing that I mentioned that I did that I didn't think any other podcaster would have done. I took the binars talking to each other and tried to slow it down really, really, really slow. I got all the way down to like 14%, and guess what I determined?
They're speaking gibberish?
Yes. Yeah, I couldn't tell you. It sounded like a slow version of the gibberish. Because I thought if we take our voice and speed it up, we could sound like binars. But then when we slow it down, it doesn't work.
Well, I think we could probably sound like binars, but you'd have to start with us going... So if you speed that up, then we will sound intelligent.
Yes. And actually, they are... I read on here somewhere that the... They actually give away the secret sauce on the binars about how they're slowed down or something. I can't find it no more. Anyway.
Red alert. Yes, another red alert. We interrupt this broadcast for something huge. News daughter wants to speak with Dr. Roberts about the United Kingdom.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, hello, hello. Are you, you're Lou's daughter, right?
Yes.
Okay, and what's your name? Alexa?
Yes.
Yes, I thought so. I mean, he's mentioned you before. How are you doing today?
Good.
Lou said you wanted to have a chat or to speak.
Yeah.
Well, go on then.
I have some questions.
Sure.
How is it in England?
How is it in England?
Yeah.
You mean compared to America?
Yeah.
Or just in general?
General, I think guess.
It's probably exactly the same. Yeah. I would imagine. Yeah. So I'm on the. I live in London, which is our capital city. So it's like quite large. There's probably about 20 million people or so. In the city, so it's a small country, but a lot of the population is near London. I think that we don't get as much space as you do in the US. I think that a lot of people live next to each other and so on. But I think normal things are probably exactly the same. Kids go to school, adults go to work. There's not really a huge amount of difference, I wouldn't have thought. Although now it's 8:20 in the evening. And I know that's not the case for you.
No. Oh my. I was actually planning on moving to England when I turned 18, so I just wanted to know.
Okay. Well, there are lots of Americans that come over to England. I used to work with a girl that came from Oklahoma, and she came over after she finished her college, after she graduated, and worked in London. So you'll find lots of Americans, certainly in a big city like London. There'll be plenty of Americans and lots of people from lots of different places. So you're not at school today?
No.
Is it the holidays?
Yeah, no, it's summer break for us.
And summer break is what, a week or?
No, we have at the end of May to June, July, and parts of August, we have no school.
And that starts in May.
Yeah, it actually starts at the end of May.
Wow, I mean, here in the UK, that starts in July.
Whoa.
So the children have bits of July away from school, all of August, But they usually then have to go back on the second week of September, so just after Labor Day kind of thing. So is where you're at? Is it very hot? Are they keeping you out of school because it's too hot, or
not really? No? 2 years ago, it was barely hot in the summer, so pretty much. I live in a place that has barely heat
mm-hmm.
in the winter and summer. It has heat, but not that much. It's not like in Texas. It's really hot in Texas.
Yeah.
It can get around 90 degrees in Omaha.
Okay. That's not too bad. Not too bad.
No.
Anything else? Do you listen to your dad with all of his internet shows?
Oh, do you like doing the show with my dad?
I do. I heard him though. I did hear him ask that. Do you listen? do you listen to your dad's shows?
No, not really.
No, because he has what? He has. I mean, there are people, I suppose, all over the world that that tune in and to listen to your dad talk about Star Trek. Does that sound strange to you?
Yes, I didn't know how much people like Star Trek.
I don't know. I mean, I don't think, you know, some people like Star Trek, but the good thing about it is the people that like it really like it a lot. So I think that's what, you know, that's why a lot of, I suppose your dad would have met and is friends with lots of people on the, you know, from the internet and the show.
I'm not really into Star Trek at all.
Not yet.
No, not any. I'm into different kinds of things.
God, what do you enjoy?
If you talk about music, I love a lot.
Okay.
If you talk about music, I like One Direction.
Yes. They're English, though.
Yes, they are.
They're right.
But Niall is Irish.
Oh, yes. Okay. Because I think they were on the... I don't know much about One Direction, but...
They were on the X Factor.
I thought they were from the X Factor. Yes,
they are. That's how they got discovered.
Yeah. So we have we have the X Factor in England, and I understand that Simon Cowell is also over in the US, and I apologize for that.
I want to meet Simon and tell him what he did about making One Direction famous.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. That's good. And what about movies, television?
Movies. There's a. I can't think of the name. There is a movie I like, and I know them. It's actually called One Direction, This Is Us.
Ah, I heard about that. Because that was
It is a really good movie.
Was that in 3D? I thought that was
in 3D. It's in 3D. Yeah. I think it's in 2D too, or I don't know.
And what about school? What do you enjoy about school? Everything? Maths?
I don't know. I'm not really into school that much.
Oh, you have to be into school.
I don't know if school gives everything you need in life, but school's kind of learning too much. What I have to say about school, you learn too much, it feels like your brain is going to explode.
Well, maybe. Although I've never seen anyone's head explode.
No, what?
Okay, and do you have any brothers or sisters? You don't, do you?
No.
No, I think Lou mentioned that he doesn't, because I've got a bunch of children. My daughter's my oldest is 10 years old.
Oh.
So she's not your age yet, but a little younger. And then we've got two boys and a baby as well. So a whole big family full of noise.
What I like it in England?
Would you like it?
Yeah.
I Absolutely. I don't think there's anything not to like at all. It's not the sunniest place in the world.
Well, that I can't understand. Usually the sunniest place is south of the equator.
Oh, yes. But also, it's actually not... It never gets very, very cold.
Oh, I like that.
So we've had snow for... So if we think about the last 10 years, we've probably had snow for 5 days, something like that. So it's just not that cold. It's always above it's above freezing, but it never gets really, really, really hot. So it's a bit strange like that. Because I know, you know, when you see places in the US, even quite warm places, you get much more, you know, much hotter summers and much colder winters. Places like New York, I know that there's a, you know, it's much hotter there than here and in the summer, and much colder there than here in the winter.
5 days?
Oh, about 5 days of snow, yeah.
I love that. Is your oldest on Facebook?
No. We are. Are you allowed on Facebook? Because
yes.
I don't allow my children to go on Facebook.
I think I started at 9, something like that.
Wow, that's lucky.
And then my dad, I was very stupid putting my address on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
So my dad took me off and put me on a site called Facebook for Kids, which I did not like. So I secretly went back on my Facebook.
Okay. So actually, let me tell you how I'm probably much more strict than your dad is. So for the children, no Facebook.
Whoa.
I don't know if you have a phone or not.
Yes, I do.
But no phones. I don't know if you have your own television.
I do.
No televisions.
Whoa.
I don't know if you have like a computer game console or anything like that.
I have a computer and I have a Wii.
Okay, well, we have a family Wii.
What?
But we do not have anything in the rooms. So everyone has to work extra hard to play. And the thing is, because there are the four children... or three of the children that would play computer games, they always have to play together. And if there's anyone, even one of them, that misbehaves, then no one gets anything. So we're very, very harsh on our children. So I think you've got it very, very lucky.
I still have a strict dad. But I understand, since you have like... How many kids you got again?
Four.
Okay, I understand, because four kids is like a lot, and you got to work extra hard to get them all, like, to pay for everything, like bills and money. You need money for food.
But it's also keeping everyone happy at the same time. Whereas I'm sure if you go to your room and watch television, you're fine. But if one of my kids goes to their room, watch television, and the other one will probably want to annoy them, and they end up fighting a lot.
Yeah. Lots of siblings fight. You have a 2-year-old, right?
A 2-year-old, yeah. A little baby girl.
I have a second cousin who is a 2-year-old.
Mm-hmm. And so are they talking yet? Talking a few words?
Her name's Amara, and she is talking. She can talk, but she can walk, talk, and do everything like a toddler can.
Mm-hmm. Our little girl at the moment, she doesn't really talk very much. But if you put on, I don't know if you know of the film Frozen.
Oh, yes.
If you put on Frozen, she'll sing along to the songs.
That's what Amara does too.
Yeah.
And her mom puts it on Facebook, which is cute.
I am also tempted to do so, because the little girl is very happy. You know, she does like to sing along, and it's very cute to see a little baby singing songs.
Do you have any pets?
Oh, we don't. Aww. We don't. My wife wanted to get a cat. For the house.
Kitty.
a little kitten, a little. I don't know if you know that that there's a type of cat which is a Russian blue, which is a like a small gray cat with very short fur.
No, I never heard of one, but
so it's kind of a it's a bit of a like a Shiba cat. I don't know if they have that expression in the US, but it's like a cat from the Orient, like a Chinese kind of cat that's very pale, pale gray. And she wanted to have one of them. We're not, we don't have a big enough house for things like a dog or anything like that. But a cat might have been a, you know, a cat might just work.
I have a hamster and three dogs at my house.
Oh yeah.
A hamster is like small enough, but you have to get a cage and food and water. And you have to take a lot to care of him. So it does cost money to get one.
No, I remember when I was growing up, my sister had a hamster. But my brother was playing with the hamster and then forgot to lock the hamster cage door. So the hamster escaped and we couldn't find it. I think it must have, at that point we were living near a little forest and I think the hamster just ran away into the forest. We used to have some fish.
A fish. My dad used to have a fish. He overfed it.
Ah, well, that's not as bad as my little girl. So this is the 10-year-old, but when she was maybe 4, she thought that she would like to talk to the fish. So she took the fish out of the water and tried to talk to the fish, but then dropped the fish onto the floor. And the fish was okay, but my daughter got a little bit upset that the fish was looked like it wasn't enjoying itself.
I don't think if I was a fish, I would not enjoy that at all.
No, nope, not at all.
Because fish need to like breathe in water, and it can't breathe in water if it's out of water.
Yeah.
Thank you for talking to me, Dr. Roberts. Roberts.
Oh,
sorry.
No problem at all. No problem at all. And I heard your dad telling you that.
Oh, I have a question.
Oh, go on then.
How far? Where is Doncaster?
So Doncaster is, I would say it's up north, so London is. London is in the south of England, so the southeast of England. And Doncaster is, I believe, in the northeast. So when I say up north, it's a little way away, but we're only a small country.
Yes.
So I think you could drive to Doncaster, which is a long, long way up north, in maybe about 5 hours or so. So it's maybe 300 miles north. So it's not as far as, you know, I'm sure you're much further away from other cities in the US.
I gotta go, actually.
Okay, no problem. Well, nice talking to you.
Talk to you some other time.
Okie dokie.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, now that was so cute. We continue with part 2 of 11001001. Hey, that sounds like binary.
Okay. Hello.
Hello.
How was that? Was that fun?
Yeah, fun. Actually, you can get to Doncaster in 3 hours, it says.
Ah, okay.
I was over. Well, I mean, by the time I've driven, it probably will be 5 hours. But it's way up north. But that's only like 300, 200 miles or so. Oh. It's not on the US scale of how long would it take you to get to Los Angeles or things like that. Nice. I know that's a lot much much further.
Oh yeah, quite okay. Well, that's pretty cool. She had fun.
Oh, that's fine. That's all good. Absolutely.
Oh, now that was so cute. We continue with part 2 of 11001001. Hey, that sounds like binary.
Okay, so I don't know. Remember where we left off, but I do. I know I'm.
Oh, I do. No, I do, because you said we remember that we'll leave off at blondes and jazz don't mix.
That's what I have. Blondes and jazz seldom go together. So, blondes and jazz seldom go together. Now, why is that? Because Yeah, obviously he changes it and he gets a brown-haired girl, but he wants something more sultry. So that's when it generates what we know as Minuet.
Yes, that's right. I mean, I forgot that he actually did two iterations on the girl. I actually, well, in my mind, I only remembered the one. But no, he keeps, you know, he doesn't take first choice or second. He keeps looking for Minuet.
Yes. And you know what? We could jump ahead a little bit. But when the ship is all done, the situation's all secure, Bynar's turned back on. And he goes back down to the holodeck, and he just can't find her. He tried a bunch of different variations, but he just could not find the right one. Don't you think at this point he could have called down to Bynar and say, "Hey, could you send back 10 and 01? I would like to have them help me with something. After all, we did save your planet."
I suspect that may be part of the plea bargain. So 11, 00, 10, and 01 will be, you know, sentenced to death unless they give give Riker the codes to access, you know, the real Minuet. Right. At which point everything will be commuted and they'll be off scot free.
But you see, here we go. There's a plot hole there in itself. I just now thought of that. If they couldn't come up with Minuet's picture or her face, how are they able to do it in Future Imperfect?
Well, Future Imperfect's the episode that you know flips a few things on you. So it has the plot, and that's the disguise on another plot, and I can't remember if that's the disguise on the third. But isn't Future Imperfect in the end all in Riker's mind?
No, it was something that, you know, kid named Jean-Luc turned out to be Varash. He made all this up in the cave that they beamed down on. And Riker wakes up in the future as captain of the Enterprise. Turns out that was all supposedly done by the Romulan. What was his name?
But the vision, I mean, I thought the visions were drawn from Riker's memories.
It's possible, yes.
That's what I meant. So it's rather than it being from kind of like records, I thought it was drawn from his memories. But that might have been just a second stage. That might have been the second level of the dream. And they pulled back again. I can't remember.
That is true, but that's a good point. You probably solved that as a plot hole. But then I was thinking right now, if that's the case, then they could take that picture that he saw and actually develop a holo program around it. He'd have Minuet back.
Yeah. I mean, certainly later on, right, it seems much more... The holodeck seems to have much more, like, customizable features. I think this is the first... Well, this is one of the instances where we go to, like, you know... Maybe I'll say, like, modern-day holodeck. You know, move into the next level from what we've seen, seen previously. But even now, it seems that it's like a character selection that the computer's offering up to you, rather than you being able to, like, you know, program exactly what you want. You know, a bit like the episode of Deep Space Nine when someone comes along and says, "I know exactly what I want in the holodeck. It's Kira."
Oh yeah.
And you know, give it to me. I don't think we're at that stage yet of kind of customizability. But then again, I haven't said that. We turn up in Holo Pursuits in a couple of years with Barclay, and he puts the entire crew in. So,
right. He didn't have to scope them out. I guess once you've gone in the holodeck, it's got your template forever.
Yes, a bit like the internet, I suppose. Our voice will be forever out there, and we'll never be able to have a kind of like a secure voice print identification, because they'll just clip together clips of the show and access our bank accounts.
Oh, I bet. Wouldn't that be something? Then again, as many times as LaForge has been in there, it's probably got every diagram of every strand of hair on his head perfect now. So, okay. So what do you think about Riker's trombone playing?
Actually, I've got a note, actually a special note, that, I mean, this is where we get Riker's trombone from. And I think this is secondhand information, but I heard that it was put in because Jonathan Frakes actually plays the trombone, which I think that's kind of like, it's a neat touch to bring in. It makes it slightly more, I suppose, reasonable that he would have, you know, he's able to play in the way that he does, and yeah, I suppose, you know, you don't have to worry about him holding the thing up the right way and whatnot. But actually, I quite like his trombone. It's a nice little character feature. Although I bought into the idea that Riker would have chosen this place for, you know, rest and relaxation, there's a bit where Picard comes in like 5 minutes later, and he states that, oh, this is not too dissimilar to a place that I might have chosen. And I don't buy that. I don't think that's true at all.
No, I don't either.
I mean, can you see Picard heading down to New Orleans to listen to some jazz?
Bourbon Street jazz, New Orleans? No, I don't see him in Bourbon Street. No, not at all. No, but you know, obviously the piano player didn't like it. Yeah, I keep your day job. I thought it was pretty good, actually.
I like the interaction with the band. I think the band were, you know, it wasn't, you didn't just go on the holodeck and do your thing and then, you know, everyone thought you were wonderful. I like the character of the band, you know, and the stuff they, you know, the way that they said that Rick wasn't particularly good and the way they interact with him, I thought was quite nice and believable. And frankly, if you had a holodeck, you know, i.e. a computer game experience like that, I think that you probably would have a bit of, you know, personality and humor built in rather than just everything just working out your own way, which is kind of what happens in the episode that shall not be named in season two and Data when he tries to learn about humor.
Oh, yeah. Joe Biscopo. He does his Jerry. Anyway, well, you know, he's got some pretty good playing skills on the trombone here, but later on when we get down to Misty, he just can't hit that one key.
Hey, you've lost me.
Okay. No, there's an episode where let's see. It's actually Future Imperfect, I believe, is where the first time we see it, when Riker plays a trombone during his birthday party. The song is called Misty.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's the name of it.
And it's the flat note that he tries.
Right.
And it just comes out a bit weird.
Yeah.
I attribute that to stress.
Must be. Because then, you know, in the future, he tries it again, and he still can't hit it. Oh, you always make that same mistake, Dad. Have you ever heard that song? Do you know that song at all, Misty?
I wasn't aware of it when I originally watched the series. In my rewatches so far, I've never caught it as being something that I should have been aware of. So I'm not. I think I just might not know it.
You know what I think I'll do? I'm going to find that song and put it in right about here. So that way we can all hear it. Look at me. I'm as helpless as a kitten in a tree. Anyway, insert Misty. Okay. So, yeah, everyone can hear how the song really goes. Okay, where am I on my notes?
Now, did you think it strange when Riker was in the holodeck and he's kind of having a chat to Minuet, that there's a bit where I don't know how to interpret it, but Riker starts asking Minuet exactly how real she is, and she's kind of like, "I'm as real as you need me to be," and I'm not entirely sure where he's going with this. I think you shouldn't be caught asking those questions of holograms.
Yeah, because his next words were, "My girl." Yeah. Yeah, obviously, you know where he's, you know, how real are you? I don't know, just ask Geordi, like I said. He knows how real they are. Alright. So now, he's in the holodeck. Picard interrupts before he was able to go too far. And there's a problem with the warp drive.
Okay. Actually, there's... I mean, if you listen to the language that's used, and I think... we haven't used this language so far as much in the series, but it certainly becomes part of the standard tech talk. You know, Wesley mentions that there's a problem with the antimatter containment field, and you kind of know that that's bad, right?
Yeah.
Antimatter containment is something that you kind of want to keep working because otherwise, you know, kaboom. But everyone seems so calm about there being this problem with the antimatter containment. And, you know, and Geordi and Data pick up the call and they explicitly state, don't tell the captain. There's no need for the captain to know about the ship about to blow up.
Right.
And I found it very, very, very weird. And then the best thing about it was that, you know, when LaForge and Data are trying to solve the problem, they call back to the bridge and they ask Wesley whether or not he's running any experiments because the readings look so strange. And he says, I'm not running any experiments. And then they ask, well, are the binars? And he says, not as far as I know. I could turn around and ask them. They're like 4 foot away, but I can't be bothered.
No.
And again, it's a pretty lax day at the office, I think, here.
Yeah, good point. Okay, yep. So they get to engineering, and they find that no one's there. Where did all the heck all the people go? Do you think the binars, like, told them they had to leave? Nobody knows where anyone's at in engineering?
My theory behind this is I'm pretty sure that the Parisi Squares tournament is not going well, and they've had to call on substitutes after, you know, half the team having been killed.
Mm.
So I suspect they're waiting in line for their turn for Parisi Squares.
Okay. But anyway, Data abandons the ship. Everybody, you know, abandon ship. But you know, it's funny. I read this, I believe, on Memory Alpha, and I went to verify if it's true, but it is. When Data calls for the abandoned ship, they go through the decks, and everybody reacts to it, looks at it. And on one of the shots is a girl in engineering, and you can see the blue warp core lights fluttering as she's looking at, wow, is this real? And that's funny, because when engineering was empty, the warp core was shut down. And when they go back to him, it's still shut down.
No, I noticed that. It's almost as if she's just behind. She should be where either Geordi is, or possibly on the other side of one of those, you know, one of those glass control panels. But she's certainly in engineering.
Yes.
And did you notice, Lou? And this might be the last time we see this, but there was a man in dress,
right,
running off the ship.
Yes, I did. I did notice that, but I didn't want to say anything. I'm trying to get over that. So, go ahead.
Oh, and well, I think this kind of, you know, ship evacuation is, you know, clearly the correct decision to make and a prudent thing to do. Somehow, Riker and Picard aren't told about this. Now, I can give it a pass by saying that, you know, the binars made sure that the holodeck didn't get alerted. That's fine. But you would have thought that the second in command, you know, so Data, you would have thought that in the event of him having to do this, he would have found it strange that Riker and Picard hadn't checked in.
He did. So, but unfortunately, he just overlooked it. Well, they must have got off the ship. But, you know, why? Picard would never have gotten off the ship till everyone else has.
No, it's very strange that I would have thought almost immediately you would have realized that, you know, you've called this big order, but the captain hasn't come to take charge, and that should have been suspicious, and they almost pass it off because they don't really realize it until they're off the ship onto the space station, Space Station 74, I believe. They don't realize it until then, and they start thinking, you know, it's almost the excuse is, well, Picard and Riker must have just decided to leave and couldn't be bothered to be in charge or to check in, and that seemed, you know, that seems unlikely.
Right. Right. Plus the fact that, you know, the captain isn't here, or the first officer ain't here, the binars aren't here, we need to get back aboard. I'm sorry, you can't. It's almost too late. The ship is still in the space dock, but you can't beam on the ship.
Actually, on my notes, I've got these. Like, I think the words, or at least the words I've written down, quoted, are said. Look, your ship is almost clear, and you see the Enterprise slowly moving out of the space station,
right.
And it's still so close that you can imagine that, you know, if Data did like a nemesis on him, like he could have easily ran and jumped the gap between the space station and the ship if he had the inspiration.
Latched on board and held on even when it was at warp. Well, I also, you know, backing up a little bit before Data and LaForge even get off the ship, it's time to leave. After commenting that the captain is usually the last person to go down with the ship or leave, but after setting the controls, Geordi says they have 41 seconds left. Now, in 41 seconds, they have to do their casual stroll on the bridge to the turbo lift, head to the transporter room, get on the transporter pad, beam over to the space station. 41 seconds? Do you think they could have made that possibly?
No, and I assume they mean here 41 seconds before, you know, they leave transporter range or something. Because I hope they're not saying 41 seconds before the ship explodes, because it's not getting anywhere near far enough for that to be a safe thing to happen.
No, I wouldn't think so. But either way, I mean, just when they say we have 41 seconds, they don't run to the turbo lift. They stroll, you know, the doors open and they get in and turn around and wait for the doors to close. And I'm thinking by the time they got to the turbo lift, we're down 10 seconds at least. Now they got 31 seconds. So I would have liked to have seen the time crunch of them get to the deck and run to the transporter room as fast as they could. Maybe LaForge falls over, gets hurt. Data goes back, picks him up, carries him to the transporter pad. You know, that time crunch.
I think you absolutely make valid points there.
There we go. Here's another one. Did you know that there's actually 20 transporter rooms on the Enterprise?
Is this? Did they mention this in the episode? Did they mention like transporter room 20?
Yes, because okay. Decks this go to transporter pads one or transporter room 1, 2, 3, and 4. This and this go to 4, 5, 6, 7. As it went on and on, it actually got up to transporter room 20. You know, 17, 18, 19, 20 or something.
Things. I don't believe that's true. I mean, I don't believe that there are 20 transporter rooms. Maybe I'm wrong, but it doesn't. You don't feel like there are 20 transporter rooms. Although I'm sure, I'm sure you are correct that they did mention it in the show.
Yeah, I'm pretty certain, and I can always go back and make sure. But yeah, I was as they were reading off transporter rooms. I thought, wow, it's getting pretty high, and I thought it got to 20, and I'm like, this can't be.
Actually, Lou, one question. Are people going to be aware that this half of the show is slightly later recorded than the previous half of the show?
Not if we don't tell them so.
Because I went back and I listened to the earth-shattering accusation that the computer voice took a breath.
Yeah.
From last week. And you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Major Barrett takes, I think she actually takes a breath, and then she takes a breath almost directly again afterwards. Right. So it's very, very obvious.
Yes, actually, I got in my notes here. I've already edited that, and I've edited part one of this one as well. And I have in there, Angel. Yeah, here we go. At 2704 on our in our show here that we're recording now, it says insert computer taking a breath. So actually, I am going to put that in as a audio clip.
Yeah, no, and it's certainly still there in the remastered versions. They didn't they didn't clean it up or anything like that.
All right. Well, by the time they got to this point and heard us talking about it, they've already heard it. So that's Excellent. Good. You verified it's in the remastered.
I told you that I'd do my research, and I did.
Excellent. Good, good. I think that's funny. Okay, because I'd like to know if anybody has ever noticed that before. Okay, so after Geordi and LaForge and you know, all the rest arrived at the star base, magnetic field is regenerating. Isn't that just ducky? But it's already cleared space dock, and I'm sure another ship in the space dock or someone who's at another star base or right around the corner waiting at a red light, they could pick them up and take them and chase the Enterprise. But no, the nearest ship is, 6 weeks away? Some obscene number like that?
I thought it was 66 hours. I think the Trieste was 66 hours away.
Yeah.
But you don't, I mean, I understand that space is big.
Yeah.
I appreciate space is big. But in a space station, you must have a way of leaving the space station. You're not going to be left there,
right?
I assume it's like a, you know, even Deep Space Nine had its own runabouts, and you know, they could do warp. So I would imagine you should have had kind of a, you know, you should have had a spaceship or a starship nearby. Something. I would have thought.
Yeah.
But all too often, right? Even when you're a, you know, well, I think Star Trek likes to use the fact that you're out of the final frontier, so you're kind of alone, and it's a good place to have the story told. But you then, when you do return to Earth, they seldom show that there are more spaceships around, and you know, you sometimes think, surely there should have been, you know, surely they haven't just built one of these and filled it with 1,000 people and then thought, well, that's us for our exploration. You know, Starfleet, we'll leave it at one ship.
Yeah, Trieste, too small, too slow. So, yeah. Doesn't matter how quick it is.
Now, I was under the impression, I don't know if it's canon or not, I was under the impression that Data was on the Trieste. But if that's true, it's, you know, Data saying, oh, too small, too slow, you know, that must hurt for the people he left behind, for their old colleague to be dismissing their ship like that.
Really? Yeah, that's true. Yeah, the captain of the Trieste, I heard you've been dissing me. What's up with that? Yeah, that is a good point. I believe it was somewhere in there that supposedly comes out later that he was on the Trieste.
I think he's... I mean, it must have come up in Data lore that the... No, I don't think... Okay, fine. Okay, sorry. I don't think I should have done, but I've... But according to Memory Alpha, that Data was assigned to the Trieste after graduating from Academy. And that's in Clues. But apparently it's also mentioned in Data lore. So yeah, that's his old ship. And he's dissing his old ship.
Okay, yeah, exactly. All right, let's see. Oh, here it is, TNG Clues. It is followed up on, as Data claims, he served aboard the vessel. So yeah, he was in the Trieste on... He tells us in Clues, which is going to be a little ways down the road.
Actually, Clues is a great episode.
Yeah.
I have to apologize. I think these are all great episodes. I love Star Trek.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can't wait. You know, even season two, you know how I like these morality stories? Just wait till we get the one where, you know, should we let Worf kill himself or not? That's going to be some... gold there. I got.
Yeah, there's plenty of good stuff to come. Oh, there really is.
I mean, future or not, yesterday's Enterprise, I guarantee you, I'll tell you now, that's going to be a 5 straight out, because we can't do anything higher. So, anyway.
Actually, I mean, getting back to the ship, there's a little bit of a calm, I suppose, a calm before the storm when Riker and Picard are still in the holosuite, I was going to say, on the holodeck, and they don't know anything's gone wrong. And there's a really weird kind of conversation between Picard and Riker, where Riker still is, you know, he's still very much infatuated with Minuet, and he starts, I think the words they use is that he could develop feelings for Minuet just like any other woman, and he admits this to Picard. And in the back of my mind, I always like to like try to play the scene as if it was happening at an office or another workplace. And I think this scene, the equivalent of this, is going up to your boss and basically saying, oh, I've met this woman online and I could develop feelings for her. And I think the boss should really be taking it, you know, should really probably be advising some counseling is in order here. He said, well, really, we don't want you to ruin your life. Troy's willing. You should think about... spending time with real people. Let's not talk about holodecks here.
Well, sometimes it's, I don't know, I could see it going either way, you know, just like Janeway does when she changed Michael Sullivan. Get rid of the wife, make him a little taller, make him smarter. You know, obviously, being able to change your mate sometimes probably could be appealing. I could see the point of that. Oh, God, getting an argument with her over the dumbest, stupidest things. But it doesn't happen with the hologram, I would say. Doctor's wife, you know, Kenneth is just the best. You know, so, I mean, yeah, I could see the point. There is some appeal to the idea of a perfect mate on the holodeck. Oh, Okay. But anyway, you know, you guys said something about the conversation. How about the little story? Let me see. It says, meanwhile, the boy never found out until he came back into the room with his little sister. I wonder if anybody has any idea what that was about.
And even if they don't, let's put this story together.
Right. Because obviously Riker handled that situation very well. So I'm trying to figure out what is it that Riker got involved in where a little boy and a little girl came into the room and I don't know. Maybe we ought to come up with a story backstory on that.
Yeah, it's maybe I've been listening to other episodes, but I'm thinking you've seen Deep Space Nine, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it reminds me of Garak's story about shooting down the freighter. So maybe it's a bad story, what he did with the little boy and the little girl.
Okay. I see. Well, let me see. So Picard tries to leave, but Minuet gets all huffy with him. So now they know something's up. The jig is up. So now Minuet first says, I don't know what you're talking about. You know, why did they steal our ship? I don't have that information. I don't know what you're talking about. So they have to leave the holodeck, go up to the bridge, or before they go there, they go to engineering, where they have to go to initiate self-destruct. And there's no 1, 1A, 1B, 2A, 2B, 1B, C, 3, PO, I don't know. They just put their hands on the thing and they can initiate self-destruct.
This did remind me of the very similar scene in The Search for Spock. Mm-hmm. I think it borrows. I mean, I haven't seen The Search for Spock for a little while, but it felt like it was happening at the same kind of pace. Very much, you know, building the tension and playing it very, very seriously that this is a legitimate threat that might actually happen. Mm-hmm. But I suppose it is. I mean, it makes sense, right? If you do have your, in this case, as far as Picard and Riker know, there's no one else on the Enterprise other than themselves from the Starfleet perspective, so they don't have to really worry about any innocent loss of life other than their own. Someone has taken the ship, and these things are very heavily armed arsenals. Mm-hmm. So I suppose it makes sense for them to, to sabotage that rather than play along with it and hope for the best.
Well, then I guess it was fortunate that the binars were all turned off or passed out or whatever you want to call it, because obviously they could have stopped it.
Yeah, I would have thought.
And the 5-minute countdown, not 10.
I think I would have given myself I would have liked a discussion about how long do you think we need to get to the bridge. He said 5 minutes. Well, maybe. Maybe 10, maybe 15. I don't know. And also, the way that the dialogue is written, it's very much exposition between Picard and Riker, them telling each other things that they know, but the audience doesn't know, such as, yes, Riker, this is the one order that we have to be both in absolute agreement with. I know. And then a 5-minute countdown. Mm-hmm. That is right. We better get to the bridge so we can turn this off. And it's a little clunky, but I think the logic behind doing this is perfectly reasonable.
Yeah, well done. Sorry, I had a little cough there. Okay, another thing is when they set the self-destruct and Riker has to agree to it, the computer says, does the first officer concur? Mm-hmm. But then when they go to cancel self-destruct, the computer asked, does the first officer agree?
Okay.
So I don't know if that's a glitch or something.
Okay, so I'm going to hit you with a bit of logic here, right? So your argument's about the concur turning into an agree, right?
Right.
So the choice of words. Well, I'm gonna do it the other way around, that if you need two people to agree to set the self-destruct... Mm-hmm. Surely you only need one of them to turn it off.
Right.
Because you're basically saying we need two people to agree to destroy the ship, but then that means only one of them has to step down for that to be broken. You don't need both of them to step down. So I don't see, you know, I understand why you need two of them in order to have it make it happen, but why you need two to cancel, I think that's a logical inconsistency. Because, you know, all you do is that you set the self-destruct. You're dealing with, you're dealing with people that have taken over the ship. This first officer happens to be killed.
Right.
And nothing you can do. You can't get out of the self-destruct under any circumstances, despite the fact that the captain has now made the situation safe. So I think you should only have one to step down, two to step up to self-destruct.
That anyway. Makes perfect sense, because like you say, I mean, it's a firefight all the way to the bridge. They finally made it, except for Riker didn't. He has a broken leg and is still on deck 15, and Picard makes it to the bridge because it's all secure. You know, computer, cancel red alert. Does the first officer agree? Ah, oh, crap. So yeah, it makes no sense as well. Or wasn't there another one where does a first officer agree? And he says, yeah, wholeheartedly, 100%. I'm all for it. Yes. Cancel.
Yes, there is. Yes, there is.
Simply yes would have sufficed, number one.
Think, at the back of my mind, I was thinking that was this episode. Mm-hmm. But it's not this one. It's somewhere else. I wouldn't be able to place it. But that does, you know, that definitely does happen.
Right. Or what if Riker just has a death wish? You know, does the first officer agree? No. Number one.
he does the first off agree? No.
No.
Picard, I want a raise.
Yes.
I want a raise now.
Yes, I want the next 4 months vacation paid on Risa. You're going to pay for the Horgons and the women that come with them. Let's see, what else?
And I don't think I've been promoted in a while.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I want to be commanding commander. Let's see what else. Or get Starfleet to promote me. I want to be the captain for the next year. You could be my first officer. I'm going to let you see what it feels like to be a first officer on this ship, and then I'll agree.
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely.
Okay. And of course they won't. They won't do that. But they figure out that something's wrong, and they are able to save the ship. And they're even able to find out the name of the file that the binaries stored on the computer and turn their computer back on. I guess it's not just a hold the power button for, you know, 20 seconds until it shuts off and then turn the power button back on.
No, I think that's true. I actually have big problems, but not big problems as you'll see in my actual summing up. But I have problems with the bit at the end where they have to do whatever they need to do, and you know, with the binars dying, because I've watched this episode a lot, I still don't quite understand why the binars are dying. You know, I understand that there was supposed to be a supernova, they were supposed to shut down the planet, they were supposed to then reboot the planet afterwards, but I don't know why these guys are ill, and I don't know why as soon as they've copied over the core, they jump up and they're happy again. It seemed a bit weird for a species to be so tethered to their homeworld, especially if they are shown that they are able to be away from their homeworld. Uh-huh. They seem to be very tethered to the state of the homeworld, despite being 6,000 light years away.
Right.
But the stuff where I really don't get what, you know. They appear to stumble upon the answer. They seem to have a problem finding a file name. Surely that's not that difficult to find. Surely there's like a root directory, and there's a 16 billion terabyte file called 11001001.
Yeah.
And they probably think, well, that's probably it. The scenes with Data where he's having to explain, you know, it could be a name or you know, the mother's maiden name or, you know, your favorite cat or whatever. I didn't see the need for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they want to make it easy, obviously. How are they going to get help if they don't make it easy enough? I mean, what about the computer? Computer, do you have a file that's really, really large in your memory bank?
Yeah, that you've recently had created.
Yeah. And then, like,
within the last hour.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, and then, like you say, once they start it up, there's, you know, it does a little diagnostic, and then it starts to turn on, and poof, these guys wake up. And you have saved us. I don't see that either. There has to be some warm up, boot up process. Windows has to start, and then if you have a driver off, you have to try and hunt down the driver or reinitialize your whole computer. Yeah, right.
And I would imagine that the first like 6 or 7 days will be spent virus scanning the file that you've actually downloaded to Binar.
Yes, that is.
So it's just sitting there. And that's where they lose half their population to starvation.
It has to rebuild the SQL database, so please stand by. But then again, what if the self-destruct had happened? I guess you could say the entire species of Binars are dead, because the only backup they have is on the Enterprise. They didn't have backup somewhere else, you know? I mean, didn't they back up their whole society to the cloud? Google? we call it the Google Binar. I mean, you know? Wow. Okay.
having said all of this, lots of fun stuff about the about this. This is pretty quite far ahead of its time, right?
Oh, yeah.
In terms of these files and in terms of kind of even the way that they try to show that you're interacting with technology and stuff. So I think it's we're going back 25 years, and the ideas of cloud technology and the rest of it wouldn't have been around. I don't hate the Binars. I do think they are an interesting species, and it is something unusual and something, frankly, you don't get outside of science fiction. So I do appreciate their uniqueness in Star Trek.
Oh yeah, I mean 1988, 1989, the web was the place where spiders hang out. So, I mean, there was no real internet. I think around that time, bulletin boards were pretty much popping up where your computer can do the to another computer. And maybe you can download something like, say, a 2 megabyte file that took about 2 hours and 45 minutes to do. And you can watch the little – I remember this. Watch the little progress bar. You know, you get 70% of the file downloaded. We're talking 2 megabytes. 78%, 80%, 85%, 90%, 92%, click. You can hear the phone actually hang up because somebody called in. You forgot to get rid of call waiting, and a click. You're offline. Now you got to start all over again. Oh, I remember those days.
Oh, I do too. Oh. I do too.
And that's the thing. I tell my daughter, you grew up. We had the internet. You've had 175,000 channels you could choose from. www.whateveryouwant.com. And just like, who was it? The comedian that talked about in our days. We had 3 channels on our TV. I remember 3, 6, and 7. And when the president was on, your night was shot because it was on all channels. And at 11 o'clock, he did the Star Spangled Banner, and then all night long. There was no nighttime TV back then. So,
well, the situation is much worse in England. I mean, multi-channel TV is maybe realistically 15 years old top.
Wow.
In the UK. 4 terrestrial channels, of which, a lot of them, they wouldn't be 24 hours a day. There used to be crazy stuff on, including, and they don't do this anymore, and they should, which and the English guys will know that it's the Open University. What you had on BBC Two when that shut down, you had hours of lectures and educational programs from the Open University, which is a government owned university that is like distance learning in the UK.
I guess that's better than nothing. You can't sleep. You got to have something.
So there is stories about you'll see it in comedy sketches and so on. If you can't sleep, then you can learn about, you know, the ancient Greeks, and they'll have, you know, they'll have proper serious documentaries on about ancient Greeks, and, you know, followed by some stochastic calculus or something like that,
right.
At 3 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
Those were the days.
Those were the days. Yep. I used to call them, at the end of the night when the broadcast went off, I used to call them the bug fights. The white screen with all the black dots, the fuzz, I call them the bug fights.
Yep.
So, okay. Well then, do you have anything more about the Minuet story?
Well, the only thing is that they go down to talk to Minuet, and Minuet kind of explains what happens. And they...
That's right. I was going to make that point when I said that, you know, she has no information. I don't know what you're talking about. But then when they come back, she tells them the whole story.
No, she, sure. But then she mentions that the sun was going to go supernova,
mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, that's a bad thing for a sun to do. A sun going super... they do mention supernova, right? It's not just a nova, it's a supernova. If your sun goes supernova, you should be looking for another planet. You shouldn't be trying to wait this one out. So the sun goes supernova, but the plan is to, you know, upload to the Enterprise, shut down, and then re-upload after things have passed. But apparently the Enterprise was too late. And I think, okay, that's fine. But it still seems like they uploaded to the Enterprise and they shut down and they're waiting to be downloaded. So to me, there was a disconnect between... Minuet said that they didn't have a chance to put their plan into operation, but I kind of got the impression that they did. I thought that this was part of the plan.
Yeah.
So I didn't quite understand what would have been different had the Enterprise been there on time rather than had been quote-unquote late.
Matter of fact, I would have thought the Enterprise was downloading the program while en route. That's
maybe.
I mean, it's such a big file. They didn't just get into orbit and then download the program.
He said they got into the orbit. Someone threw up a USB cable. They plugged it in.
Yeah.
The only thing that I have to say about when they confront the Bynars right at the end, because they, you know, Picard and Riker happen to stumble upon what to do, and they do what is needed, and they save the day, and they ask the Bynars, you know, hey, why didn't you just ask for help? And their answer was, well, you might have said no. And I thought, okay, that's, you know, perfectly fair. The stakes were high, they had to make a choice. But then Riker goes ahead and completely ruins it by saying, binary thinking, everything is either a yes or a no to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's true. There's no reason why someone who communicates in binary has to have binary thinking.
No, I kind of see that, because in a sense, they're computers. They're computers with, you know, humanoid bodies, but their thinking is binary. It's either going to be yes or no. It's going to be one or zero. There's only two answers. There's no, let me think about it. Let me call my boss. We'll get back to you in a couple weeks. It's yes or it's no. And so the need was just too great to risk a possible no. They would rather pay the it's easier to what is it easier to beg forgiveness than to ask the question. So that's what I think that's about.
Maybe I'm just because he's using the word binary there and he's stepping on my toes slightly as a mathematician, I think he's not quite understanding what they mean by binary,
right?
Because it's not about just saying yes or no. The fact that you communicate in binary, I mean, frankly, we're communicating in binary as we speak now, just due to the fact that it's going to be a digital signal that gets sent across. Now, if we happen to have evolved to the state where we can just make the noise ourselves rather than rely on an ADSL connector, then that's fine. It's a bit weird, but it's fine. But I don't think your thought patterns would have meant that you become an extremist with either a yes or a no viewpoint on the world.
Right.
So you don't go to a computer and say, hey, computer, can you open up, please search for this file name, and the computer comes back, no, and then blows up because it's decided that it's a no today rather than a yes.
Yes.
Um, But I'm nitpicking here.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know, some. Do you remember earlier in this podcast? Well, last week when we did the blah 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 blah. That thing that actually took that, was able to play with it and speed it up really fast to where it's actually going to – it kind of sounds like Bynar the way they do it. So I was going to include that in this. So chances are if you heard me even talking about this in this show, then you've already heard that I was able to do that and you heard the outcome already. So
super, super, super.
It actually sounds kind of cute. So I guess we could I guess we could do the summary in Bynar. So 1-1-1-0-1-0-1-0-1-1-1-0-0-0-1-1-0-0-0-0-1-1-1-1-1-1-1.
Yep, I agree. I agree with almost all of that.
Oh, did I have a one out of place? Okay. All right, then. I guess it's that way. All right. Go ahead. Whenever you want to start the ending.
Sorry, I have not looked at the ended script at all. Is it me today?
I don't know. I'll do it.
I'm so bad.
It's okay, I'll do it. It doesn't even matter. We just do whoever says it first.
It's not a huge issue, right?
No, whoever says it first. All right, so it's now time to give a rating for this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being last week's show and 5 being something that we know will be coming up later. Really, really good stuff, man. On the scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being bad and the 5 being good,
Luke. Mm-hmm. With 1 being 1 and 5 being 101.
Ah, there we go. Why don't you do that? Do that. You do it since you got that ready. Is it 101? That's a binary number for 5?
It absolutely is. So 2 to the power of 2 plus 1.
Oh, go for it. You do that then. No, you have to do that.
Okay, now it's time for us to give her a what?
a rating on this episode.
Okay. So now it's time for us to give a rating on this episode from 1 to 5, 1 being 1 and 5 being 101. So, Lou, I'm going to let you go first. What did you think of this episode?
I'm going to give this a... Okay, I was thinking pretty much middle of the road. So what's the binary for 3?
1-1.
Okay, I'm going to give this a 1-1. I don't know if it's quite really a 101. But, I'm going to give this a 1-1. I like the story. The computer people that are going to die if you can't do their program. It's kind of silly because what happens if there's one digit off on the program and they're gone? Or if the Enterprise stalls, breaks down, has a flat tire, and they are late arriving to Bynus, which they were late arriving to everything. Then the entire society dies, so the stakes were pretty high. This is a little silly, though. The Minuet story, I don't think I would be in that situation. So in the end, it just doesn't sing to me. So I'll just go in the middle of the road and give it a 1-1, and I'll let the audience determine what 1-1 comes out to in binary.
Okay. Actually, I think I'm going to score it a 100. I think that it's a good episode. It's not a great episode. It's not like, it's not the outstanding. I don't think it's the top of season one, but it is an enjoyable episode of season one. I think that there are shortcomings to the episode, and I think we've spoken about some of the nitpicks that we have about why did people do things in a certain way, Picard and Riker not being around for the evacuation, things like that. Actually, there's also a point that we didn't talk on, which is when Data starts feeling guilty about not having done the right thing, which I could really do without.
Oh yeah.
But overall, I enjoyed the episode. I I think it's well paced. I think it's well done. I think they have a threat that turns out not to be a menacing threat, but turns out to be a threat that you can understand why they've done it. I like the Bynars. I think they come in this one episode, as far as I'm aware, and I think most Trekkies kind of know who the Bynars are. So as a species, they come in and they punch well above their weight. I like a lot of the ideas that this episode introduces and plays with. Yes, by next week they're gone and they don't get picked up and reused, but frankly, that was the nature of storytelling back then. So yeah, overall, a 100 for me.
100 it is. I just had a thought. Since the Enterprise now has a copy of the planet's entire mainframe computer, could they keep it and take it to a starbase and download it there? And they could pretty much, now that they have that, I guess if a person could write a virus for their computer.
Yeah, I always assumed that they downloaded and then deleted their own copy.
Yeah, we don't need this anymore.
Because I assume they deleted their own copy and then they had to start running the defragmenter to clean up whatever they had left.
Plus, when they created space on the mainframe, did they get rid of Worf's opera? Ooh, not good.
They do mention, by the way, that they're using every free byte of information, which is, it's probably an exaggeration, but I can just imagine them, let's say that they're a couple of terabytes short, and they must be sitting there thinking, do we really need all this Klingon opera? and who really needs the replicator patterns for Turkey? Let's just get rid of this stuff. It's us or them, so we better choose us for survival here.
That's right. Okay. All right, then.
Next time on Star Trek The Next Generation.
I'm strong, I'm locked, I'm getting younger.
A dying commander takes a youth drug to fight terrorists holding hostages. But will dangerous side effects jeopardize their mission?
If we don't deliver Jameson in 5 minutes, one of the hostages will be executed.
Sir, look out!
Find out on Star Trek The Next Generation.
All right, so join us next week as we review Season 1, Episode 16, Too Short a Season. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
And I'm James from London.
And good night.
Thanks for listening.